Welcome back to the Tank Me Later podcast, which is part of the Fantasy Basketball International Podcast Network. This is episode 53, and today we're going to be talking about the Grizzlies, the Jazz, and the Nets with The Athletic's Michael Waterloos. Let's go ahead and get into it. Right, and before I bring Mike in here, just wanted to remind you that support for this Fantasy Basketball International podcast is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Shaving your jewels doesn't have to be risky business anymore thanks to the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra. This trimmer is all about keeping things smooth and safe so you can trim with confidence. Treat your wrinkle berries and join the 10 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by going to manscaped.com to get 20% off plus free shipping with the code FBI20. With Manscaped, it's easy grooming. No surprises. Trust me, this trimmer will be your crown jewel's new best buddy. That is 20% off plus free shipping with the code FBI20 at manscaped.com. Show your balls some love and feel free as a dove. As I said, this is the Tank Me Later podcast. I'm going to go ahead and bring in Mike for this. And Mike, when I was trying to do this offseason series, I was going through my team, like trying to do three teams at a time and trying to find somebody that I think is a fan of at least one of the teams. And when I got to this one, I got stumped for a while because I couldn't think of anybody, and then randomly popped in my head, I think Mike's a Grizzlies fan. Am I correct?
You are correct. I am a Grizzlies fan. It's been fun the past few years, but this year, I think with like, 33 different players or so, it wasn't as much fun. But yes, that is me, and you are correct.
Sweet. Love to hear that. I'm going to go ahead and pull up, have some slides with a little bit of information on the teams we're going to be talking about that I forgot to upload before. So I'm currently doing that and trying to stall a little bit of time. Actually, while I'm doing that, how'd you become a Grizzlies fan?
That's a good question. So it's kind of like my mapping out my fandom in baseball as well. Whenever I kid, I really, really liked the Canadian team. So the Vancouver Grizzlies, okay. I was all about, especially I grew up in Pittsburgh. We didn't have a team, you know? So, and at that time, like you couldn't be a Philly fan. You weren't allowed to be a Cleveland fan. It was against the rules. You couldn't do it. So I grew up a fan of the Blue Jays and then the Vancouver Grizzlies. But then as I got older, I started just really liking players because I'm like, hey, I can like whoever I want. So I love Damon Stoudemire. Again, sticking with the Canadian theme, but Allen Iverson was my favorite. I absolutely loved AI. He was just my favorite player, loved getting to watch him play. And then after he retired, you know, he had a stint in Memphis. But after that, it was on to LeBron James because he was in Cleveland. I could see him whenever I wanted to. But then LeBron did the unthinkable, and he went to those terrible, awful, ugly Los Angeles Lakers, and it's just you can't be a fan of them. You know, if you're a fan of them, you may as well like Duke, you may as well like the Yankees, you may well like whomever else out there, the Cowboys. So I'm like, you know what,
yeah,
I love LeBron, I appreciate him, I love him so much, even now I still love watching him win. I just really want him to go 0-82 every single year. So when that happened, I'm like, I need to find a new allegiance. And I started thinking, I was like, you know what? When I was a kid, I loved the Grizzlies. I love watching Ja Morant play at Murray State. I love Triple J. You know what? Let's do it. Let's do it. We're getting fully back into the Grizzlies now. So I felt like I was doing a full circle on my childhood, and just kind of ever since then, it was kind of full speed ahead. So LeBron, thank you for going to Los Angeles. I am better off without you, and I'm ready to go full Memphis. So it's been great.
Love that. And as I now have my slides up here, so if you're watching, you can, I guess, follow along. It's not that much information, but we have Memphis's record was 27-55, which certainly wasn't kind of what they were expecting. After the draft lottery, they have picks 9 and then still 2 second rounders with picks 39 and picks 57. And we'll talk about some of these players here in a second, but when I was doing these offseason breakdowns, I kind of gave like a team direction for every team. And Memphis was pretty easy. Like a lot of these earlier ones have been, oh, this is a a rebuilding team. Oh, this is a rebuilding team, but they have their franchise player. Memphis is a contender. Well, obviously, you mentioned it, 33 players that suited up for them this year. I think John Morant played in 9 games, if I'm not mistaken. And then Desmond Bane missed a large chunk of time. Marcus Smart missed a lot of time. Pretty much everybody missed time at some point. So how do you kind of feel about, like, do you think that, okay, everybody's back healthy next year, Memphis is right back into contention, or do you think that there was, you know, still some question marks there?
I think there were a few question marks, but I mean, we're kidding ourselves if we don't think that they were a contender. I mean, they're coming off of 3 straight seasons kind of showing that, being like a top 4 seed each and every single year. And I think it all started really last year, and I got kind of like ripped on this for Twitter, but you know, that's what Twitter is. But I said, you know, Steven Adams going down the playoff series, that's the biggest loss that they could have, just because that size against the Lakers and that size in general. And whenever we started out, whenever like we saw the season start and it was announced 2 days before that Steven Adams is out for the season, it's like, uh-oh, here we go. And then to your point, like the dominoes just kept falling. Ja came back from his suspension. Plays 9 games, then he's out with a torn labrum. Then you have, I was at the game where Desmond Bane got hurt, where he hurt his ankle in Memphis. And then you have the Marcus Smart trade that was supposed to cover Jaw, and then the injury for him, he went down. And then, yeah, 33 players. And I think that's one of those things that, like, you see on TikTok, somebody be like, all right, let's go back and forth and name as many Grizzlies as we can 2023-24 season until somebody you can't name anymore. You're going to get to 20 and be like, who the heck are these guys? So I think they're definitely a contender. And, like, you wish, like, as a Grizzlies fan, that if this happened, it would have happened last year or it would have happened next year. So you had a chance at Wemby, you have a chance at Cooper, but now you know, you're in this draft class, which it is what it is. But Memphis has made it clear the direction that they're going, who they think they are, what they think they are, and they still have that core. So yeah, there's no reason to think that they can't come into next season healthy and be a top contender in the West again.
Yeah, and to your point, it's a weak class, quote unquote. I mean, we'll get into that towards the end of each of these teams, but as a Hawks fan, I was thrilled to see them win the lottery, but I had been telling people for a while, like my friends that are also Hawks fans, like, hey, if we're going to actually move up in the lottery, it's going to be this year. Like, it wasn't going to be when Anthony Edwards was there. It wasn't going to be when Zion was there, despite Zion going and touching the Hawks basketball. And then Anthony Edwards obviously being from Atlanta. It was going to be the year that it was considered the like worst draft class in at least 20 years, which may be a bit of revisionist history because there's some of these classes where people were pretty low on, specifically the Anthony Edwards class. But
Anthony Bennett, anybody? Anthony Bennett?
Yeah, that's the one that keeps coming to my mind is 2013. Yeah. Anthony Bennett going one was, it's pretty ridiculous looking back on it, but even in the moment.
Oh, absolutely.
But as far as Ja Morant, so obviously only played 9 games this year, played 61 the year before and 57 the year before that. I would imagine that the suspensions are behind him. Let's just assuming that the suspensions are behind him and that's not something that is an issue anymore. How much do you trust him health-wise? Because he's coming off a season-ending injury, which isn't, I'm thinking it's probably not something that's going to be like a recurring injury, but given his style of play where, you know, he's flying at the rim, like, injuries happen when you're that high in the air. How much do you trust him health-wise? And is that something that you consider if you're entering a draft and interested in taking him?
Yeah, it's tough because I trust him health-wise, but you know, to your point, he has just that reckless style. He gets compared to Derrick Rose, like whenever he was younger, but you know, there's the good and the bad with that, right? Because we know that it was the injuries that kind of derailed Derrick Rose's career and now their teammates and everything for what that worth. But yeah, I trust him as far as the health goes. It's like, I think you just have to kind of pencil in that he's going to miss at least a dozen games every year. If you can get that, cool. That's what it is. I think, you know, you're mainly more concerned about his fantasy skill set and like kind of him kind of covering all your categories for you. I think that's kind of the bigger risk with it. But we even saw last year going into different drafts, whether it be redraft or dynasty, he was just falling and falling and falling. Like in his startup, you could get him in like in the 40s, I think, like right around there. And that was great. Closer to the season, it started creeping up to late second, early third, which, you know, is still good. And, you know, there's going to be something for him to prove. You saw when he came back in those nine games, he was fantastic. His first game back, he hit that game winner at the buzzer. Then after that, he went down in New Orleans, and again, all the controversy with the dance that he was doing, the LSU dance, which, you know, we don't have to get into all that. Anyway, yeah. the injuries, you know, they're there, and I think they're going to be a cause for concern throughout his career. But I'm not really like pinging him any more than I am anybody else who's kind of dealt with him. Like, to me, I'm more concerned about LaMelo Ball as far as his injuries go, or a Jalen Johnson, as great as he is, or a Joel Embiid. Like, those are some guys that I'm more concerned with their injuries, just the type of injuries or their age, than I am with Ja.
Definitely. And you mentioned kind of the categorical value, because he is considered one of those players that's better in points leagues. If you look at the categories, he's been a subpar free throw shooter. The turnovers aren't great. The defensive numbers aren't consistently there. The field goal percentage, he had that one year where he's almost 50%. Aside from that, it's been a little bit lower. You know you're going to get really good points, rebounds, and assists out of him. Kind of either middle of the pack or below average everywhere else. Is there any hope that he's able to kind of improve in any individual category? I think probably the easiest one would be free throw percentage. In nine games last year, he shot 81%. Is that something where it's like, hey, small sample size, he shot it pretty well, but not really expecting that? Or is that a realistic path? Is, you know, an increase in steals, like, is that possible? Anything there? Or is it just going to be, when you're drafting John Morant, don't just punt free throw percentage, don't worry about that? Is that something you have to consider?
I think, you know, growth isn't linear, as we see, and he's still 24. I hate to say only 24. He's still 24, and there's room for him to grow. And we forget, because his past two seasons have been such a whirlwind of, like, mainly down and trying to prove himself and everything like that. But remember, this was going to be a face of the NBA. This was going to be like Nike's next big person here. So again, I think there's a lot to come out and prove, and I know he's been working hard for a fact, especially on his free throw shooting. Like, I know that for a fact. So I think there is some growth there. Is he going to be an 80% shooter from the line? You know, probably not. But, you know, I think he can stay around like 77%. And I think you live with that. That's where the most likely growth is going to come from. The threes, not really. The turnovers, you know, you're kind of living, you know, it is what it is. He's a three turnover per game guy. And defensively, I don't really see it. I don't really see the growth there. So I think you are going in knowing that, like, okay, I'm not going to get my defensive stats from Ja right here. And to your point, like, he is the perfect guy who's a points leagues guy. He's that guy you say, this is not format specific. You're not punting him in roto category leagues, but, like, you're shoving him down a round or two because of just the difference he can make in points.
Yep. For sure. And we did a dynasty mock draft a couple of weeks ago. He went 36th in that. Moving on to Jaren Jackson Jr., who went 22nd. I'm pretty sure I was actually the one that took him 22nd. But just looking at him this past season, it almost felt like he was just a totally different. I mean, it probably didn't even feel like it. He was a totally different fantasy player as kind of the focal point of the offense, or a 1A, 1B with Desmond Bane when he was out there, because Ja Morant only played nine games. You know, career high, 22.5 points per game. The blocks were down from 3 to 1.6. The field goal percentage dropped from 50.6 to 44.4. Rebounds continued to drop, which has been kind of a thing for him forever, especially got, I think, magnified a little bit with Team USA, but that he's just not a great rebounder for a big. But heading into next season with John Morant healthy, with Desmond Bane healthy, with Marcus Smart healthy, and this team expected to compete, potentially adding either somebody with the ninth pick or making another trade to add even more talent, are you expecting Jaren Jackson Jr. to kind of get back to what he was the year before, where the blocks are up, the efficiency is up, but the usage and points are down?
Yeah, I was actually kind of hoping that he fell further in your in the draft that you did, because I would kind of be able to back up my point a little bit better. But I think there's going to be a little bit of overreaction theater, if you will, to him, because people were expecting so much. Like, the guy that I think is going to be like, take the Jaren, maybe step backwards next year, just because the blocks is going to be Chet Holmgren. I think there's a very like similar parallel there with them. But I think, you know, you made some good points. Whenever Jaw's out, when Steven Adams is out, a lot was on Jaren. He was the guy, and the spacing was all messed up there. Like, he had to play, he had to play center instead of playing power forward. And that's kind of like a really big thing, because they're back up big. Again, two days before the season, Steven Adams was announced he's going to miss the year. So that's like a lot of Xavier Tillman. That's a lot of Santi Aldama whenever he was healthy. There's a lot of guys out there who just aren't really playing like Memphis envisioned when they were building this team. So Jaren had to play out of position a little bit. We know as an elite shot blocker, which he is, I do believe he'll go back to that. I don't think, like, he went from, I believe, 3 blocks per game to 1.6 in the past year. Whenever you're that elite shot blocker, you're not going to be an elite rebounder. And that's the big thing with him, because you're going up for those blocks. You're kind of challenging him at the rim. You're getting yourself out of position for rebounds. That's kind of like the bittersweet part of it. But if they do get a big back who's able to kind of be that rim protector, that traditional center, allow him to be more of the roamer, and then we're going to have a healthy job. They're going to have a healthy Desmond Bane, and whoever at 3, whether it's they – draft somebody at 9, maybe they trade that pick. Maybe that's a teaser for what we're going to talk about here in a little bit. But I definitely expect Jaren to kind of have that comeback season. And honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if he's one of the favorites to win, most improved or comeback player of the year or whatever, like, made up award the NBA wants to give him, just to kind of acknowledge how good he is after a down season.
Yeah. And, it was a down season by his standards, but the career high 22.5 points per game was still very cool to see. It was a 4-point increase from the year before. Obviously, that changes. We've talked about his role changes. Is there a chance that we're looking at a guy that could average still 20 points per game, but also get his blocks back up? Like, is he still able to take another step forward within what this team has and keep that scoring up? Or do you think it's like Bane's back, Jaw's back, we're healthy. Jaren, we really need you just focusing on defense. Like, we're not needing, obviously he's still a factor, but the factor offensively.
Right. Yeah. I think it's all about what their center position looks like next year, to be honest with you. I think it's just their ideal situation is Jaren, we want you to be able to be that stretch four. We want you to be able to roam on defense. That's what we need for you. If they're able to have him do that, then yeah, I think there is some growth there. We've even seen him add to his offensive game. I saw him hit a dribble pull-up shot for the first time in my life last year. It's like, oh, okay, Jaren, it's expanding your bag even a little bit more. We'd love to see that. But yeah, I think he could be a 24 points per game and maybe average 2.6 blocks. I think you'd be very happy with that. So yeah, I think this offseason is very, very big, and especially with the picks that they have, especially that number 9 pick, if they're able to kind of move it and, if they are the contenders they think they are, depending what they can do there, I think it's really going to tell a lot about what they see Jaren's role being for next season.
And then moving on to Desmond Bane, who went 28 in that dynasty mock. He's been really good the past few years, just on Basketball Monster. He's 34th at 9-cat this year, 36th each of the 2 years before that. Usage went up this year with Ja out, which is what we expected. Career high 23.7 points per game, career high 3.3 threes, career high 5.5 assists, which, putting him in a position where he is more of a playmaker with Ja Morant out. That's what just had to happen. And it went well. He was in the 83rd percentile in pick and roll ball handling situations, which I think taking a guy that's generally off, has the ball in his hands, but is not the lead facilitator, and then seeing him do that, I think that's encouraging for him and just his development as a player. Do you think that, he's been able to be a late third round guy with or without Ja. Is there another step for him, or is it can he get even better than he has been, or is this just the player he's going to be for the next 5 years? Which, don't get me wrong, that is great. If he can be exactly what he has been for the next 4 to 5 years, Memphis can be golden. But do we think that there is another step that he can take?
I think he was able to kind of show last year and throughout his career, really, because he came in, he's going to be a spot up shooter. Okay, he can knock down the shot, but can he do this? And then every year it's okay, but can he do this? Okay, but can, and then we saw hey, he kind of has to do this right now. Like whenever you're running Jacob Gilliard and Derrick Rose out there, like he's the guy who kind of has to take over that offense and run the office. We saw that last year, and he was able to do it successfully. So like, I think he is just going to be who he is. And I mean that in the most respectful way possible. Like he is just a good one. Like he's a good second option some nights. He's a good third option some nights. He's able to hit the three. We're able to see him to create. Like he was able to improve defensively out there, which is good. And like even he's able to find his shot. He seems much more comfortable trying to create his own shot too, which I really, really like. So yeah, I think he is who he is. And again, that is not a knock as much as it may sound like one. And the crazy thing is he is older than Triple J and Ja. Like it doesn't seem like that because he's been in the league a fewer years than both of them. But yeah, he's 25 right now. And like, I think he's just a really, really good player. And to your point, most teams would kill to have that second or third option on their team. So yeah, I think he's definitely worthy of just being, I don't want to say just, but like, I think our buddy, Dan Besber says like, the old man squad, the boring squad, like boring championships. It's fantastic. We want the shiny toys all the time. Desmond Bane isn't that, but at the end of the year, he's just going to be helping you. He's a guy that you know is not going to hurt you. And he may not have the highest ceiling, but he has one of the highest floors. So you'll definitely take that.
100%. And as far as what he can bring to Memphis and you know their aspirations to win a championship, I do think this year happening is bad as it was for the team and as frustrating as it was, it'll end up being a good thing. Like getting to see, like now that it's over, like don't worry about it anymore. The losing's behind us. Having Desmond Bane have a, I don't even want to call it like a development season, but like where he gets to be, okay, a larger part of the offense, see what he can do. Jaren Jackson Jr. is a larger part of the offense, see what he can do. All these guys without Ja, that way, you know, when they get into the playoffs next year and teams are game planning to get Ja Morant, you know, uncomfortable and just making things difficult on him, other guys will be able to say, hey, I already have done this before. I did it for a whole season. We're good to go. So
yeah,
hopefully that'll work out. Another guy that benefited from a million injuries was Vince Williams Jr., who was not really on anybody's radar. Maybe if Vince Williams Jr. was on your radar, just to anybody, then bravo to you because he just wasn't on mine. But he impressed me very quickly when he started getting minutes. I was able to get him on the waiver wire in my home dynasty league, which was cool, but I don't think I was able to get him anywhere else. But as far as him, like we know he's a good basketball player. I would think that we're on the same page on that. But now that everybody's healthy, I think the number one question that I have, is there enough minutes for him to contribute next season in terms of 12 team fantasy leagues, or is it, oh, he's only going to see 15 to 20 minutes now and he's going to play well, but you know, the fantasy numbers aren't going to be there simply because the minutes aren't.
Yeah, I think it's a tough question. I hate to keep like using this crutch, but it really depends what they do with pick 9, because like,
yeah,
I'm trying not to give away what I think and like what's been rumored, like they'll happen with that. But like, say they end up trading pick 9 for Kyle Kuzma, like that kind of takes away a lot of like what we'd see from Vince Williams. But if they end up going with somebody, if they end up drafting somebody instead, like I think Williams will be okay. I think the big thing is that like they really like him, and he kind of, you know, I don't want to say he has that dog in him, but he's like a, that Dylan Brooks, but without all the headaches, man. You know what I mean? Like he has that defense that you want, that lockdown defense. He will go out there and just talk smack to everybody. He can hit the open shot. He's not going to force a million open. Like he's not going to force a million shots like Dylan Brooks did. But you know, he's just a menace out there. And for a season last year where you're like, okay, like Dylan Brooks is gone, it's time for Zaire Williams. He has to step up. Okay, it's time for Santi Aldama. He has to step up. Okay, it's time for Kenny Lofton. It's time for David Roddy. It's time for all Jake LaRavia. All these guys, you're like, okay, this is going to be the guy. And it was Vince Williams who stood out the most. And I really think that means a lot to them. It all depends what happens this offseason. He's going to play, but I don't know if that's going to translate to fantasy, especially if it's going to be like, if he's capped at 18 minutes a night, he's going to be out there. He's going to be put on their best guy. And it's really going to be like, hey, go out there. Don't let him score, take two or three shots a game. And then that's it. So that's what I'm kind of concerned about. So he's somebody I'm actually kind of looking to fade this year for fantasy, just for those reasons, as much as I love him and I do believe in him. And he was one of the best stories of last year, just in the NBA in general.
Yeah. I noticed you didn't say Timmy Allen when you were mentioning guys that had to step up in Memphis, but we'll let that one slide. So as far as what they're actually going to do with pick 9, we'll actually finally get to talking about it now. There are options to trade. I mean, I'm sure that even in a weaker class, there are going to be teams that are interested in moving helpful players for pick 9. But let's say in this hypothetical scenario that they sit at pick 9, I have a couple of names down as far as guys, and really it could just be more of like a positional need, and I'm just taking the top guys that are available who could be there at 9 and saying, hey, like this will fill that need. So one of the guys I have is Donovan Clingan from UConn, and honestly, probably not going to be there. A lot of recent reports have him going top 5. I've seen some that have him going top 2. I think before the Hawks got it there, I even saw one that said that he could go 1, and I would be upset if that happened. But that could fill the center need that we, you know, alluded to. Can't have Jaren Jackson Jr. He's just more effective as a 4. Another guy that I have, and really this could end up being just whatever small forward is available, I have Cody Williams from Colorado, but that could be Ron Holland, that could be Modest Buzelis, that could be, and my friend that's a Tennessee fan that hates the Memphis Grizzlies, he'd be upset with me for saying this, but Dalton Connect could be an option just as getting a wing guy. Do any of those names intrigue you as a Grizzlies fan that make you say, I would love if my team drafted them?
I mean, I think the ideal one would be Clingan if he were to fall, but I agree with you. That's not going to happen. So the guy I have is actually Ron Holland. So I'm kind of with you there. He's a high motor guy, the kind of guy that the Grizzlies like, and you know, he fills that wing void a little bit. And you know, it's with Vince Williams, I don't really know how that overlap is there a little bit, but the Grizzlies showed last year you cannot have enough depth. 33 guys, besides their previous couple draft classes, they've been really good lately at developing rookies, and he seems like a guy that would just kind of fit that Memphis grit and grind approach that they have there. So he's the guy that, if they keep the pick, again, if I had to put money on it, I would say the leader in the clubhouse is that they trade, but it's no secret it's a weaker draft class and it takes 2 to tango, but I think that Holland would be the direction I'd want them to go in if they keep the pick.
Yeah. I actually just thought about this because, you know, having my friends that are also Hawks fans, we talk mock trades. I'm going to run 2 by you.
Okay.
1, DeAndre Hunter for pick 9. Is that something that you would do if you are representing the Grizzlies here?
All right, so I need to put my bias aside because DeAndre Hunter is one of my least favorite players in the entire league.
Right there with you.
And, you know, the contract, too, I don't really love.
Yeah.
It's about, like $20 million a year, I think. $18, $20 million, something around there. Yeah. I'm trying to put my Hawks hat on. I would balk at that. I would say no. I don't think that does enough. If Vince Williams didn't kind of come along that last year the way he did defensively, I would kind of consider it. But I think, like, hey, we have DeAndre Hunter at home. It's Vince Williams.
Okay, so, that's fair. And DeAndre Hunter for significantly cheaper is also a nice factor.
Yes,
The other mock trade would be just building off of that. And this, if you didn't like that one, you may like this one less, would be Clint Capella and DeAndre Hunter for Marcus Smart and pick 9.
So, man, I sound like a Hawks hater right now, but Clint Capella is one of my least favorite players too. just because, like, I love
him. We're trying to get rid of him. That's why we're doing these mock trades. We're trying to get him out of here.
Oh, yeah. And I love Onyeka Okongwu since they drafted him. He's one of my favorite players. So it's been so frustrating. Like, they drafted him, then they signed Capella through the extension. However, when Steven Adams went down last year, I tweeted something along the lines of, I can't believe I'm saying this, but Memphis, please call Atlanta and get Clint Capella. I would try really hard not to do that still. I'd counter and say, hey, okay, like, we know you're taking Sarr number one. Capella is going to be expiring. Giving number nine, you know, that's going to be tough for an expiring Capella, who we know, like, has brook hands and everything, and really is a traditional center who's kind of dying out. Why don't you allow him to teach Sarr and kind of coach him? Why don't we give you number nine and Marcus Smart, and we'll take Onyeka Okongwu from you and DeAndre Hunter, and then we can make it a deal.
I'll send that in my group chat. I don't think they're going to like it, but
okay,
we love Onyeka Okongwu as well, but
everybody doesn't. Everybody he dislikes Capella, so I totally get it.
Yeah, man, it's Capella's great as a rebounder, and he's all things considered a very good defender. Every time he misses a wide open layup, like, my heart just breaks. It's the most frustrating thing in the world. So
if I could get Houston Capella back and get that, like, Harden Capella lob city with Morant and Capella, I'd take it, but I think we're out 5 years too late on that.
Very true. Very true. We will move on to Utah, who finished 31-51. It seemed like they were going to be competing for a play-in spot for a little while. Like, they literally were competing for a play-in spot. And they said, yep, trade deadline's here. All right, cool. We are done playing basketball for the year. We're going to pack it in and get ready for next year. They now have pick number 10. They have pick 29. They have pick 32. They dropped a couple spots after the lottery. Their team direction is just interesting because I said rebuilding with plenty of pieces. I don't know. Maybe you disagree with me. I'm not entirely set on saying Utah has their franchise player, because I think Lauri Markkanen is phenomenal. I think he could be in the right situation, like a 1B on a championship team. I don't think with the timeline in which they're trying to rebuild their team, he will fit in as their superstar. And I also don't think that, as much as I like Keontae George, Taylor Hendricks, Bryce Sensabaugh, like a lot of the young pieces that they have there, that any of them is the franchise guy for Utah. I could be wrong, but that's just kind of how I feel about where they are. Like, they have so many pieces. They have a bunch of picks. Like, they're in a good spot, but I don't have the guy that's, okay, in 5 years when the Jazz are in the playoffs, or 3 years, who's the Jazz's best player? Is that player on the roster? I just don't think that they are. How do you feel about the Jazz?
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think they have that player. Like, and I don't want to say that player since Donovan Mitchell, because obviously that was 2 years ago. They traded him away, and they traded away Rudy. Like, this is what they're going to do. And we saw them just compile all the draft picks, all the resources from the Timberwolves. And hey, that trade's looking pretty good for both teams right now. But yeah, I think Lauri is more of a 1B. He's kind of is there any other kind of comparison we can use instead of Robin to Batman? Like, maybe we can use just like, I have no idea. Some other one out there, some other comparison one that we want to use. Yeah, that's the classic one. I just feel like we need something different out there. I'll try to think. I'll try to think of it as we kind of go through here. But I could pull out some nerdy wrestling ones or hip hop ones or something like that. But so I just feel like he's just kind of that 1B guy, and he can't be the guy on a championship team. And I think this is more of a me problem, and I'm okay admitting that. I don't care that I'm wrong. I don't care anything like that. I have a hard time ignoring what he did in Chicago or what he didn't do in Chicago. I have a hard time ignoring the player he was or the player he wasn't in Cleveland. I realize now we've had two straight seasons of marketing being good. And it's just like, okay, if you didn't buy 2023, here's what I'm doing 2023-24. Like, he said, okay, he backed it up. But there's still a part of me in my head just like, were the Bulls, I mean, they are like bred in mediocrity. Like, are they just like, they can't develop him? Was that a them problem, or just kind of take him longer to come along? But there's still something in me that's hesitant to fully buy into marketing as being a 1A for a team. And also kind of like my 1A for, or my second option for my fantasy team too. There's just still some kind of bias I have there that's kind of holding me back on him.
Yeah, he's about to turn 27. He went 33rd in that Dynasty mock draft. He's been, like you said, phenomenal the last 2 years since he joined the Jazz. And they have been more exciting than I think anyone expected them to be because of marketing.
Yeah.
In my mind, the Jazz have to believe that he is capable of being a 1A or at least a 1B on a championship team, or they would have traded him by now. Am I crazy to think like they're just holding out for a trade? But I would think that you'd want to trade him earlier than they have to maximize picks that they're getting back. They have to think, okay, he is a guy that we can rely on to be our star while these young guys develop, maybe get the playoff experience. And then at some point, I don't know, maybe it changes and he's a secondary player because these rookies have developed. Maybe that's another pathway here. I don't know. I feel like my question with him is, how can Utah maximize him as just an asset, whether that's a trade asset or an asset on the floor? What the heck are they going to do?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, you know, you wonder if there were like, you've heard his name in rumors, like, oh, maybe he'll be on the market. But I think the other GMs, the other teams are like, hey, like, we saw who this guy was too before this 1 year. We need to see it again. So maybe it's just like, all right, Danny Ainge is like, well, hey, let's have him build it up and show it. He can do this again. And hey, I don't want to say it worked, because Markkanen is a very good player. Do not get me wrong. He is a very good player. And he was able to show it. So I still wouldn't be surprised if a trade happens that you're able to kind of like get more picks or kind of more assets for down the road. But we know that Danny Ainge is very, very, very patient. He will wait people out. He will not take the deal unless he can get his deal. So if he's like, hey, you know what? Fine. I'm just going to stay here. We're going to just roll with marketing then. He's shown what he can do. That's fine. He can be the 1A for us right now. It's not going to be the 1A long term. But to your point, he can help these young guys. He can help the Taylor Hendricks. He can help the Keontae George, like Bryce Sensabaugh, all these guys develop. So, yeah, it's I don't know if Utah knows what they want him to be either. They're a very smart front office. So I think they have to have a plan. It's just, I struggle to see what it is too with him, because I don't know who he is.
Yeah. It's interesting. I remember there was a rumor. I think it was just a rumor. I don't know how credible it was, but that Danny Ainge was basically asking for like 5 firsts for Markkanen. Like, if he said, okay, like, he's not really available, but like, he could be if someone gives me 5 firsts, like, or like the Donovan Mitchell package, which I don't think anybody's giving up for Markkanen, especially, I mean, prior to what Minnesota did this year. I think that was the interesting timing of it was, hey, Minnesota just gave up a ridiculous amount of picks for Gobert and they were the 8 seed. Didn't really work out for them. Why would anybody give that up for Markkanen after 1 and now 2 good years that aren't obviously on the same level as what Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert did in Utah? As far as like a, I guess more of a redraft question, but maybe something to consider in Dynasty as well. Do you think that, you know, Utah adding the number, like with the 10th pick in the draft, potentially, I don't know where else they would really add talent unless it's other trades. Do you think the Jazz are going to play competitive basketball this year? Or do you think it's going to be the same thing where they pull the plug with 2 months left in the season, Markkanen hardly plays after that, and you're like, hey, sure, he's a top 15 guy in per game value, but he's not playing basketball, so I'm not going to draft him this year.
Yeah, I'm probably not going to draft him this year, and that's one of the big reasons is, like, I always try to look like, okay, what's it? You have to make the playoffs, you have to make the dance, I get all that, but at the end, like, I'm looking at this team makeup, what are they playing for, and I don't see them there in like being ready to compete. I see them as they're constructed now, as a play-in team at best. And I don't think that's what we've seen Utah the past couple of years. Like, they'll kind of pull the plug. So I don't doubt we'll see that again. So it kind of gives me a little bit of pause to take marketing for that reason. I'll probably let somebody else do that. But there's always that time it's like, hey, like, that was the big knock on SGA for so long. And then it's just like, hey, the Thunder, hey, they're going to kind of actually play these games now. And it's like, well, damn, I wish I had SGA now. But marketing is nowhere near that talent. And I'm okay kind of just kind of, if this is his year, and Noah, if you take him and I don't and he hits, I'll tip my hat to you and say, hey, congrats, man. The gamble that I saw paid off, and, you know, more power to you, but I like to kind of minimize that kind of risk when it comes to playing time and tanking teams.
Yeah, I was ready to draft him, or I was very comfortable drafting him this past season, and I was expecting big things out of him, and that happened when he was on the court. But then, despite Utah being in the play-in race, they pulled the plug, which I get it. I respect it. Like, hey, we don't feel like we can compete for a championship. We have young players. Let's let them develop. As opposed to a team like the Lakers or the Warriors where, hey, we're in the play-in race, but our guys are 35. We need to try and win now. You know, let's go for it. Yeah, but definitely. I really think Utah could have been, like, had they tried the whole season and, you know, stayed healthy, I think they would have at least been in the mix for it. But, and probably would have lost out on a couple spots, maybe gone to like 13 or 14 in, like, had they actually gone all out to try and win it and make the playoffs, play in, either one. But Walker Kessler, who, goodness, is very frustrating because heading into last year, I mean, in dynasty startups, he was going in sometimes the 30s, even like late 20s, because he was coming off this incredible rookie season with blocks where he wasn't starting a good bit and then ended up starting by the end of the year. High expectations. I remember there was an early, early redraft mock. And I think Alex Reclean took him in like the second or third round because he was so high on Walker Kessler. And I remember like thinking at the time, like, oh, that's a little bit higher than I would probably take him. But like, if you're high on your guy, go for it. And then he's coming off the bench and it didn't really change much. I mean, I think after Kelly Olynyk was traded and they were kind of tanking, he was starting. But even as the season winded down, there was times where he was just coming off the bench. Do you think that he will ever play enough minutes to be elite in fantasy? Or is he just a big center that gets played off the floor at times because he can't switch on to smaller guards and still be quite as effective?
So Walker Kessler is the makeup of the kind of guy in fantasy I love to target. I love targeting the guys who are overhyped coming off a great year, and then they kind of disappoint and you see the pendulum swing the other way. That's when I love to swoop in and try to get them at a value. And it doesn't really, it sounds bad, but it doesn't really matter to me who the player is in that point. It's just like, I'm looking at the value there and it's just like, hey, I think people are kind of overreacting the other way. So I'm actually kind of going for him. And one thing that we've learned about the NBA is it's a copycat league. You're seeing the success that the Timberwolves had this year with playing the two bigs, with playing the traditional big like Rudy Gobert. And I wouldn't be surprised if teams such as Utah are like, hey, we can do that too. We may not have Cat. We won't have a Cat player, but if we have somebody who can fill that role, another big guy that allows us to be able to kind of keep Walker on the floor, I think that that's there. And looking, what, 88th in the draft that you did, mm-hmm. I think that's a good value. I mean, I in a startup last year, it was a 20 team, and again, this is a little different because we used real salaries. I took Walker Kessler in the second round because his salary was like 2.3 million, so it like really helped me with the salary cap and everything like that. But like, he's somebody I was like, no, I'm not gonna cut, I'm gonna go. And like, he's somebody I like that I think can get you those elite blocks, can get you around maybe 12, 13 points per game. It's really all about just the minutes, but it is going to be his third season. I can see those kind of creeping up and I can see the kind of stats coming with it. And it's just at that point with the value, I don't think there's anything but upside there. Because if he's giving you what he's giving you right now, you're not really taking too much of an L if he falls to that point in the draft. So I'm more than okay kind of pulling the trigger on him at that spot.
And just to talk about his numbers in this past season, 23.3 minutes per game, which was after playing 23 minutes per game as a rookie, so not really any change. 8.1 points and 7.5 rebounds were both down from his rookie year, but, I mean, it's not that much different. I mean, it's pretty similar. Field goal percentage was a little bit down. It was 72 as a rookie, which I think was also kind of a factor with him going so high after that. It's like, hey, this guy, as a rookie, just shot 72% from the field and blocked 2.3 shots per game in 23 minutes. That's unheard of. You know, he shot 60% from the free throw line. He shoots 1.5 per game. Who cares? It's not really changing all that much. The blocks are elite. If, you know, if he's playing 28, 30 minutes per game, I mean, how good can this guy be? Is he going to be a, you know, say he continues to grow and the minutes continue to grow? Could he be like a 15 point, 12 rebound, three block per game guy that also shoots a high percentage and then, yeah, let's face it, does nothing for you in the other five categories? Well, he probably won't turn the ball over. So there you go. That's his five categories. But is that the kind of upside? Or I don't know. I guess you seem to be a little bit more optimistic about him. How high do you think his minutes can get? Do you think he can get to like a 32 of like a traditional starter? Or do you think, hey, this guy's, you know, a really good shot blocker, but we're going to cap him out at 26, 28 minutes per game so we can have, I guess, better switchability on the defensive end? Plus, he also isn't, I'd say, a super polished offensive player.
Yeah, yeah, he's really not. I actually had some hope that he may be able to kind of extend his range a little bit, but we really haven't seen that. I think he's going to end up right around the 28 or 29 minute mark, to be honest with you. But that's kind of like the per minute beast that we could see. And yeah, and it's hard because, right, you're always projecting forward. So whenever you read off the stats, it's like he wasn't that much different from the season before, but the Jazz really weren't much different from the season before from their strategy, start off hot and then just kind of like tank down the stretch. So like, I think there are better days ahead for him. I really truly do, where we were excited about him coming into last year and we kind of saw like, okay, there wasn't really that next step, but it's only year three. And we typically see it's the year three guys who take that big step forward. I'm not projecting him for a, like Jared Allen finally gets the starter's role. He can be that kind of guy. No, but I can see him being 13 and a half points, 12 rebounds and getting like 2.7 blocks per game, 2.8 blocks per game. And I think that can be like a really, really nice floor. And again, I like these boring guys. I think boring guys really, really, really help. And there's a lot less risk with them. And yeah, I think Kessler's a safe, boring player, but that, you know, you can have some frustrations with it too if he ends up just not getting those high minutes. But I think we will see those go up and settle in around like maybe 27, with 28, 29 being kind of where it could be.
Yeah. Moving on to some of the, I guess, even younger, because Walker Kessler's actually very young, but Taylor Hendricks, who went 95th in our mock. He's coming off of, you know, didn't play a ton his rookie year, but I think he played well at in spurts. His steal percentage as a rookie was 1.6 and his block percentage was 3.1. And I have this number down. I believe this is from Derek White this year, where he had a block percentage of 3.2 and a steal percentage of 1.5. A guy who's well known to be able to get both steals and blocks. Despite being a guard, Taylor Hendricks' numbers per possession were pretty similar. And he's just a dynamic fantasy player. How high is this guy's ceiling?
Well, leave it up to you to find a way to work Derek White into a podcast about the Utah Jazz here. I don't want to revisit that fantasy trade that we made in our 130 teamer. But anyway, as far as Hendricks, I think it's sky high ceiling. There's a reason he was going to be like he's projected to be a top 10 pick last year. And we saw it. I thought the Pacers should have taken him over Jairus Walker. I thought he was going to be a better fit there. But yeah, I think there's a sky high ceiling. And he's just one of those guys who is so young, so unpolished. But we saw him grow throughout the season. You kind of talk about Utah shutting it down the break. We started seeing him get some big minutes down the stretch there. In March, we just saw Hendricks playing around 29 to 33 minutes consistently, saying, hey, go out there, do it, show us what you got. And I think he has the highest ceiling. I think he has a higher ceiling than Lauri Markkanen for next year's season. Is that kind of is that a hot take? Is that too?
He has a higher ceiling?
Higher ceiling. I think the likelihood.
Oh, I thought you said next season he has a higher ceiling. Yeah. You're saying, oh, okay.
Yeah. 100%. That's a hot take. Yeah. I think Hendricks has a higher ceiling than Markkanen. I think the floor and the safer pick is going to be Markkanen there, but I wouldn't be surprised if we say like, oh, Hendricks end up outscoring Markkanen for the season. Would I be shocked? No, not at all. I'd be like, hey, yeah, that's the kind of skill set that he has, as young, as raw as he is. So like, he's somebody I'm super, super excited about. I'm very high on him in Dynasty. But next year, yeah, I think there's kind of a real avenue for him to kind of make a impact, obviously, in 12 teamers, but kind of be kind of a must roster guy too.
I agree. I think he will be a standard league. Like, you have to roster him. He's, you know, providing value across the board. Just looking at some, like his last game of the season, for example, which was against Golden State. And so the Warriors are obviously competing, playing, you know, trying to win the game. And the Jazz, you know, they were playing their young guys. Played 41 minutes, 16 points, 8 boards, 2 assists, 3 steals, a block, 2 threes. So he's giving you value pretty much every category. The assists aren't going to be great, but points, rebounds, decent threes, defensive numbers. I think having a higher ceiling than Lauri Markkanen, that's a hot take for sure. I love it. I love a hot take. But you got to call it what it is. Yeah, that's a hot take.
Yeah, cool. Hey, I'm okay with owning that. And, you know, it's always great giving those because you're like, of course, I didn't think it was going to be right until it's right. And you're like, see, I tried to tell you. So that way, you know, I'm Mac from It's Always Sunny. I play both sides so I can always come out as the winner.
There
so
we go. That's the way to do it. The other, well, one of the other rookies, Keontae George, went 84th in that Dynasty mock. Started 44 games as a rookie, averaged 14.7 points, 3 rebounds, 5.2 assists with 2.2 threes, atrocious shooting, and 3.1 turnovers per game. Pretty typical for a rookie guard. Like, they struggle. That's what happens. But it's, I think it's a little bit almost more impressive that he came in and did that because he wasn't a point guard in college. Like, he was the shooting guard. Adam Flagler was the point guard at Baylor. So to come in and, you know, in 44 starts pretty quickly, learn the ropes somewhat. Obviously, it wasn't pretty because 5.2 assists with 3.1 turnovers, not ideal. Shooting, really bad. Kind of a similar question is with Hendricks. Like, do we think – how high is Keontae George's ceiling? Do we think he can be their long-term point guard? Or was this like a – hey, let's see if this works, but maybe we have him as a shooting guard / secondary ball handler and we get our franchise point guard with whether it's this draft, which I don't think any of the guys that I would consider elite point guards in this draft are going to be there at 10, or it's in the future and Keontae George may get another year of point guard / shooting guard thing kind of going on.
Yeah, I was impressed with him last year, especially like seeing who their options were. I feel like I just keep hating on everybody, but like looking at their point guard position, I was like, Talen Horton-Tucker, like, no, like I don't, he's not an NBA player. I'm sorry. He's not an NBA player. I don't get it. Why is he playing point guard? And then it's like Chris Dunn. Okay. That was fun. Like, are we really going to go back to that well again? So I kept recommending everybody on Fantasy Pros. I'm like, grab Keontae George. They're going to give him the, like, he's going to run the show. It might be ugly. Like you said, that's typical for rookie guards. It's really, really hard, but overall, I think it was a great year of development and seasoning for him. I do like the offensive game. I think it was really big for him to come in that young whenever he wasn't a top 10 pick. Like, his stock kind of fluctuated, as we saw from Baylor to the draft. We weren't quite sure where he was going to land. I think he's going to be the point guard again for them this year. I do think that they will target a guard in the draft. Kind of spoiler alert there. But I'm with you. I don't think that there's a franchise maker in this draft for really many teams, but especially the Jazz at number 10. So I do think we're going to get another year of him running points, see how it works. And if like there's enough to move forward with that, cool. If not, then they're like, okay, he may just kind of be like a heater. Like if whenever Clarkson's contract's up or Sexton kind of leaves town, he can kind of feel that role coming, kind of being that extra guard off the bench. But I do think there's a good offensive ceiling with him, just need to kind of be a little bit more efficient, but that comes with time.
Yeah. And as we now we'll shift to talk about the draft, they have pick 10, Memphis, you know, they could easily trade 9. I don't suspect Utah will trade 10. Some of the guards in the top of this draft, Rob Dillingham will be gone. Stephon Diggs will be gone. Nikola Topic will be gone. The only point guard that could be there would be an Isaiah Collier. Is that an option as a guy that could come in and be, he wouldn't start immediately, I would imagine, but be eventually the point guard with Keontae George shooting guard. I don't know how well that fits. Maybe it does fit better now that I'm talking myself into it a little bit. That could be a point guard that is drafted. But other than that, I have the same list of guys as I probably do for most teams in this range, because I feel like a lot of wings are going to go after the top 5 or 6 picks, where it could be Dalton Knecht, Modest Bozelas, Cody Williams, Ron Holland. Do you think that, you know, they could go for a guy like Isaiah Collier early. I don't expect them to take a big. I think wing is a pretty logical position. Is it going to be one of those four guys, whichever one's left?
Yeah, you know, I think there's a chance that we could see Castle fall. I think there's a chance we could see Dillingham fall. And if Dillingham fell, he would be my, you know, send Silver up to the stage right away. Don't even worry about kind of milking the clock. Screw your commercials, your ad revenue. That's the pick right there. perfect defensive complement to Keontae George's offense. Like, I would love watching that backcourt. I think it'd be a lot of fun to watch. But I do think he'll be gone. So Collier's my pick. I think, like, Collier's my pick. We kind of see his draft stock kind of, like, tumble too. But whenever we're kind of looking at difference makers within this draft, I think he has a huge upside. I truly do. Like, I don't love his shooting, but I think the upside is just huge as a offensive guy who's just going to be attacking the rim as a score first guard who's not going to be efficient, but swing for the fences. At this point, the draft isn't great. This is why I'll never be a GM, because I'm like, screw it. Collier, huge upside. Yeah, his stock took a hit in college, but guess what? We can fix him. We can fix him. Look what we did for Lauri Markkanen. We fixed him. Look what we did for like these young guys last year. We saw the steps that they took. Like, we can help him out. I think we can make him fit. So that's the rationale I take, is just like, hey, the best player in this draft is probably going to be like the number 21 overall pick. Like, we have no idea who it's going to be. So why not just shoot for the stars and go with the upside there? So yeah, he's kind of my pick that I'm going with if Dillingham doesn't fall.
Yeah. No, I've been talking myself into Collier a little bit more. I think I've got him on my big board. I think I've got him up to 14 now. I think, as I'm trying to pull this up and quickly look at it, if I can even find it, whatever. A guy that's like kind of end of the lottery but I've been talking myself into him a little bit more I'd have him outside of the lottery, whatever. Just because he struggled in college at USC, I'm trying to not let that deter me too much, because I feel like there are times when players go to certain schools and they just aren't prepared to put this player on display and, you know, help them grow to maximize what they can be as an NBA player and to showcase all of that. And it just doesn't happen. And it may not be schools, or it may not be coaches, but it may just be specific seasons. This just tends to happen. You know, a fairly recent example is Gigi Jackson. And I think he kind of did that to himself in ways. I remember specifically after one of the games, he was like on Instagram Live, like bashing the coaches and players like in the locker rooms. Something absurd that, of course, a 17, 18 year old is going to do when he's used to being called the number one player in the country.
Yeah.
As I get back on track, I am a little bit more open to Isaiah Collier than I think I was in previous months. And I'm thinking he'll be there at 10 for sure. I'm thinking taking him in that 10 to 12 range is something I'm definitely going to be on board with, assuming Castle and Dillingham aren't there, because I know I have Castle as my number either two or three best player and Dillingham at four. So I just am not even in my mind thinking, hey, they could be there. But in reality, I'm not the one drafting, so they could be.
Yeah, yeah, I think they could be. And we don't think about fit enough in college, like just regardless of the program. Like, I don't think Bronny James is going to be a good player. If his name was like Chad York, we wouldn't even be talking about him right now. But again, like, as far as just the players and the programs go, we saw with Haley Van Lith, like, going to LSU. She took a huge hit going from Louisville to LSU just because, like, it wasn't a good fit, because that's the role that they needed her to play, and her stock took a hit. So I think it's kind of the same with Collier. And if those guys are off the board, if the Dillingham, Castle, Buzelis, Topic are off the board, then yeah, I'm going to go with him and just kind of swing for the fences there. I think he has great upside there, and that he's definitely going to be a project that probably won't play a lot this year, but, you know, you'll be able to see him like get that G League action and then kind of be like, oh, okay, I'm excited for him for 2026. So that's kind of how I'm looking at him.
Yeah. And with the Jazz post February, that's when he would come in and automatically play 35 minutes per game, because they're done playing basketball by then. They're looking
exactly at the lottery. No Taylor Horton Tucker. We are going to be treated to the Kenneth Lofton Jr. and Isaiah Collier show. Let's go, Salt Lake City.
Go ahead, turn the pick in. You heard it here first.
Yes.
The first two teams that we talked about, a lot of meat on the bone, a lot of fun things to talk about. And now we are at the Brooklyn Nets, who...
Yes, we are.
In the most respectful way possible, maybe the least exciting team to talk about this summer. And fans know it. Like, it's just not a good situation. So they went 32-50 last year. I think they were expected to kind of, you know, make the playoffs, at least the play-in tournament. Kind of fell apart at the end specifically, but wasn't just a pretty subpar season. Subpar is not even mean enough. It's got to be meaner than that. But they also don't have any draft picks now, which their pick would have been the number three pick. It rose up at the lottery, but Houston got that courtesy of the James Harden trade. How fun is that? They do in the future have the Suns pick in 2025 and 2027. And then the 76ers, it's a top eight protected first. I believe that's also in 2027. And they finally have their own pick again in 2028.
Whew.
With that being said, under overall team direction for the Brooklyn Nets, I put in hell because I don't even know where you really go from here. I think Nick Claxton's a free agent. So he's one of their younger guys that has some upside. And we'll talk about, you know, players individually that could be good in the long run. How do you feel about the Brooklyn Nets? Because I think I've made my feelings about where they are as an organization pretty clear.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. I think in hell is a great way to describe it because there's just not much to be excited about. Like you said, the fans know it. The team knows it. The organization knows it. Like, it's just they're kind of stuck right now. And that's when you try to build the big three, sometimes it doesn't work out in the long run. And we were kind of seeing the fallout from that. Not even to mention, I know we're going to get into it more, but you're spending the whole season just hearing like, okay, Mikal Bridges, he's going to go to New York. He's going to go to the Knicks. And you just hear that nonstop. It's like, cool. Like, we're just playing with that. Like, okay, this is a, to quote Stanley Hudson from The Office, this is a run out the clock situation. That's what it feels like with Mikal Bridges there, because you know he's gone. He wants to go to New York, rumored. You're still kind of, you weren't able to get anything done with Nick Claxton for the long term. You have Ben Simmons. Yes, Ben Simmons is still looming there. And you trade away one of Michael Waterloo's top five favorite players to watch and Spencer Dinwiddie. I don't understand it. but no, that last one aside, they're just kind of stuck there. There's no real, like, hope for the future. Even Cam Johnson seems like a younger guy, but he's about to be 28 already. Lonnie Walker hasn't really developed in anything. It seems like they're a team, and I know we're going to be talking about one of them, but it's always just like the next man up for the center. It's kind of like the centers for the Brooklyn Nets or the running backs in NFL terms. Like, you're going to get one, run them into the ground. Okay, when you're off to free agency, see you later. Insert the next one. That's what it kind of seems like it's been with the Nets too, except when Kevin Durant wanted them to get DeAndre Jordan, which kind of blocked that Jared Allen had to get traded. But then that opened up the door to Nick Claxton, who we all wanted to get freed, who, going back to Walker Kessler, yes, kids, it does happen. Eventually they can get freed. So Nicholas Claxton is a perfect example of that. So there's really not much here. I like to target players on bad teams who are going to get a lot of run. I don't know if you really have that here. You have Cam Thomas, who's a great microwave scorer. Noah Clowney can eventually be a dude, depending on what happens with Nick Claxton. Hey, Claxton, I heard that Memphis is beautiful this time of year. You might want to check that out. And if they can get like a true offensive guy to allow Mikal Bridges to turn back into that defensive lockdown perimeter defender that we know he can be, and he's not asked to shoulder so much of the load on offense, because when you're asked to shoulder that much of the load on offense, you can't do it on both sides of the ball. You can't do it effectively. You're going to be good at this and good at this instead of being great at this and okay at this. So they are just stuck in perpetuity right now, and I have just been rambling and rambling, covering a lot of topics with the Nets, and I think this is the most I ever want to talk about the Brooklyn Nets.
Well, we are going to have to talk about Brooklyn at least a little bit more, but I honestly cover most of it. But before we do that, I need to know, Spencer Dinwiddie's on the Michael Waterloo top five most fun players to watch. I think I also just – I need the rest of this list now if Spencer Dinwiddie makes the top five.
Oh, man. Okay, yeah. He's just the guy that I have always liked from his first stint in with the Nets. He's just a guy that I really enjoyed. I'm like, you know what? He is a super underrated player. So we can do the official top five players that Michael Waterloo likes to watch. And I'm just going to go off the top of my head here with the top five. So Spencer Dinwiddie is definitely there, and no, they're not all bad like him. Bol Bol is one of my favorite players. Go Ducks, go Ducks. So definitely Bol Bol is there. We will go with TJ McConnell as somebody I love to watch. The motor is nonstop. Yeah. And being a Pittsburgh kid, his aunt was the coach of the Duquesne women for a while, Susie McConnell. So love that connection there. I'm not going to go John Morant. That's way too easy. So we'll go with another number, another one for number. I'm going to go in reverse order. Yeah, I'm just making up the rules here. So this will be number two favorite player to watch here. I will go with, trying to think who it is. It's going to be Jaden McDaniels. I absolutely love him. He is just a defensive menace, and I'm always going to hope that there's another step offensively that he can take. And my number one basketball player that I love to watch is Marin Johannes. Yes, Marin Johannes. You didn't see that coming. New York Liberty point guard, Team France extraordinaire. When you see Wemby rocking the number 23 New York Liberty jersey, that's from Marin Johannes, his fellow French person. And the one-legged three-point shot that she does, the one-legged fadeaway running shot that she makes, it's my favorite shot in basketball. She's my favorite player to watch in all of basketball. So, yes, Spencer Dinwiddie is in rarefied air.
Well, now that I'm looking at it, I don't think you have her in our Dynasty League. So I'm sorry about that. Or do you? And she's just not in the lineup.
She is not playing this year. She is focused on the Olympics over in France. So, but she is on my bench because I refuse to cut her. I refuse to cut her. She is going to take up a roster spot all year long. And damn it, she's worth it for when she comes back next year.
I see it now. I see it now.
Yes.
Cool. Didn't see that one coming. You are correct. But
it's a very random list. I understand. Yeah.
I love that, and also it's a lot more fun to talk about than the Nets, but we will try and breeze through this because, you know, we'll talk about Mikal Bridges went 52nd in this Dynasty mock, obviously was going late second round in some redraft leagues, didn't work out whatsoever. Are we somewhat optimistic about him being better next year, or are we just going to say, hey, this is kind of the player that he was? And that's just kind of the player he's going to be again next year.
I think it all depends if the Nets want to kind of turn it over and say, hey, Cam Thomas, we're going to try to make you the number one option on this team to kind of take some stuff away from Mikal. And like I talked about, if they can say, hey, we want you to put most of your focus on defense and kind of be that complementary piece on offense, then great. If not, I think what we saw this year, this seems like a guy I would like to buy back. Kind of like I talked about, Walker Kessler, whenever that dip comes, give me it. I'll do that within reason here, but I still kind of think that was more of a flash in the pan that we saw whenever he came over from Phoenix. So that kind of worries me a little bit with him. I think he's a fantastic player. And if I can get him now ahead of the trade, ahead of him going to free agency, sign me up, absolutely, long-term buying the dip. But for next year, I'm kind of avoiding him just for that reason.
And seeing a little bit of Nets Twitter pop up on my feed at times, Cam Thomas versus Mikal Bridges debate was a thing because they had nothing else better to do. just who is the star of the team? Cam Thomas with 107 in our Dynasty mock. He averaged 4.3 assists per game in March, and that's probably my little, very specific stat poll that I'm going to say, hey, does he have some upside as a playmaker? Can he be more than just a really, really good isolation scorer, really, really good sixth man? Or is he just the Michael Jordan of Jordan Clarkson's?
Fantastic comparison phrase.
Does he have upside?
He does. What I can see, okay, stay with me here. This is what I can see him being this year. Whenever the trade happened that sent Jordan Poole to the Wizards, everybody's like, place your bet. He's going to be the top scoring guy right now. He's going to have the just shackles off. He's not going to be with Steph Curry anymore. He's going to be that guy who's just going to go out every single night. And he didn't. He flopped, like, because he was that number one guy. But Cam Thomas, again, this is a second reference to quote Creed Bratton, he don't give an F about nothing. He's going to go out there and he's just going to shoot and shoot and shoot and shoot and shoot. And I think it's just like, hey, we don't know who we are. We know we suck. We're not going to say that out loud, but Mikal Bridges is the star of the team, but the offensive star of the team, Cam Thomas, go out there and cook. Go out there and cook. And I think the field goal percentage is going to be absolutely terrible. But I think like there's good offensive upside as far as just being a pure scorer where he could be the Michael Jordan of Jordan Clarkson's. But I think that can be like a good thing for your fantasy team also. So I don't think it may be at the like, hey, place your bet for leading scorer, but I wouldn't be surprised if he was a top 7-8 scorer next year per game basis. Like, why not? What the hell do the Knicks have to lose? I mean, my brain's on the Knicks already because I'm thinking Bridges is there with his Villanova crew. But yeah, what do the Nets have to lose? Go out there and just go to town to Cam Thomas. So yeah, that's kind of what I can envision for him being this year's Jordan Poole, but actually coming to fruition.
Yeah. You mentioned this, and I actually had this on my list. Nick Claxton went 61st in our dynasty mock. He's a free agent, but since there's not much else to talk about with Brooklyn, a few of the fits that I have, it was my quick research to see, does this team have the cap space or will this team have the cap space? Plus, does this make sense? Memphis was number one. Yep. But I also have the Thunder. If he wants to be in a role where, hey, he's getting paid, but he's also just being the backup, I don't know if that would be something he's interested in. Utah, I think, has the cap space. And as I'm saying it, even though they have the cap space, I really hate that fit. So maybe I need to take that out. And then New Orleans, I believe, will also have the cap space. And there was also recent rumors that Valanciunas isn't going to be back. I think Nick Claxton could fit in there pretty fairly well, not perfectly, because that spacing is going to be atrocious for Zion. But as we're saying this, I think I just talked myself into saying Memphis is the only possible landing spot here.
It's funny you say that. I think he's that's the most likely place he'll land. And if my NBA 2K24 simming of the offseason means anything, he does land in Memphis. So spoiler alert, that's happening. But no, I do think New Orleans is a good secondary landing spot for him. Just as far as who could take him on. To your point, the fit would be terrible. That would be very just kind of clogged up. But when Zion gets hurt, we've seen, hey, it's JV time. Go out there, JV. Mm-hmm. I think you can see the same thing with Nick Claxton too. Like whenever Zion's going to miss time, like you'll see like some nice runs. But for sustainability for the long term to actually return value on where you're going to have to draft him, even coming off a down season compared to last year, I think Memphis makes the most sense, and that allows Triple J to kind of be that roaming guy, to kind of be that stretch four that you need and kind of free up the paint for Claxton. So yeah, I'm really hoping as a Grizzlies fan that I see Nick Claxton there next year. I'm hoping as a basketball fan too, and just like kind of an overall fan that he goes there too, because it just makes all the sense in the world.
And then the last player we can talk about with Brooklyn, and you know, a guy that would benefit from Nick Claxton leaving, I think, Noah Clowney, who went 132 in our dynasty mock, final six games of the season. He averaged 13.5 points, 7.2 rebounds, 1.2 assists, half a steal, 2.2 blocks, 1.3 threes, and shot 61.2% from the floor, played 30.6 minutes. Incredibly small sample size, but a guy that can hit threes, block shots, score a rebound, a fun guy for fantasy, basically. I remember there was a quote shortly after he got drafted where he talked about wanting to win defensive player of the year eventually. Those kind of quotes, for some reason, I just love buying into narratives. Like, quotes really just excite me. And for some reason, I get really high on players when they talk. specifically, I don't even, sorry, this is getting a little bit off topic, but I have to bring up this quote. Did you see the Modest Buzelis quote talking about Zachary Risacher? Like, it was a few weeks ago, and he basically said, I guess people were asking about him, like, oh, like, how do you feel you compare to him? And he's, oh, I'm better than him at everything. Like, we can go play one-on-one. We can do a workout, but his agent does not want that because I'm better than him. And I feel like it's been glossed over a little bit, but to me, I dropped Risacher down my board and bumped up Modest Buzelis because, one, there was no response, and two, to talk like that, that just gets me going. I'm like, you have to be good now, right? Like, obviously it doesn't always work out, but that kind of talk really excites me. Back on track, Noah Clowney saying, hey, I want to win Defensive Player of the Year, and then having some stretches where he showed, you know, really good defensive, specifically with the blocks production. I like Noah Clowney. How do you feel about him?
Well, I really want you to kind of, from this point forward, just mark down the people who are saying things, jot them down in a spreadsheet by year, and then kind of look at the three-year rolling trends with them to see, are they actually able to back up what they say? Because I think that'd be very, very interesting to see, and I would love to kind of read that. So, NBC, get on that and kind of make that into an article. I think that'd be very cool. I will only charge you 10% for that idea. I do like him. He's very young. No love for De'Ron Sharpe, I guess, but no, that's okay. The upside is huge. He kind of reminds me of Nick Claxton before Nick Claxton. Again, it just seems like a revolving door there in Brooklyn where, okay, we were waiting for Jared Allen. He finally got free. Okay, we're waiting for Claxton. He got free. Next man up. And Clowney's definitely that next man up. I don't know if it's going to be this year. I think we may be a year too early, and just we need to remind ourselves as we have this conversation, whoever the poor sucker is that you ever were to get on your podcast to talk about the Nets next year, just remember that, like, hey, we may have been a year too early. He's still super young. He's still super raw. Give him time. I think it's more than likely than not that it's going to be next year, not this year, that we're going to see that, like, first, like, oh, okay, this is the guy we were hoping he's going to be. This is the future Defensive Player of the Year that Noah was banking on him being. So, I like him. I like the skills. I like the game. But I'm probably going to fade him this year because he just seems like one of those guys who's going to be, like, everybody's wide awake sleepers, I like to call them. Like, everybody's in on them, so their draft price is going to get a little too high for me, and I'll probably just pivot in a different direction.
Yeah. All right. Enough talking about the Nets.
Yes.
I do want to quickly, or not so quickly, we'll see, talk about the WNBA, because you have your WNBA gear on. I have my new shirt that I got, my second piece of WNBA gear. You're significantly more of an expert than I am. But as we're talking about this, it's about to be halftime between the Sky and the Wings, and my first round pick, Angel Reese, has 1 point, which is, 1.1 rebound and one assist. The debut is not getting off to a hot start at this point. How do you feel like your draft went in the rookie draft in year two of our dynasty league?
Yeah, I was very, very, very happy with it. My team was bad last year, so I'm just going to say that I tanked last year to try to get the number one pick. And I had the worst record, so I had the best odds to get the number one overall pick and come on down, Caitlin Clark. Except, no, not so fast. I ended up getting the fourth pick in the lottery. We had four teams make the lottery. I was the last pick there. So I was kind of bummed, except for the fact that my number two overall player fell to me at number four with Rekia Jackson. And yes, I also did place a bet on her to win the rookie of the year at plus 3,000 odds. I think she's the most polished, most ready-made pro of the bunch. Caitlin Clark is fantastic. She's going to be amazing. We saw last night what happens whenever you kind of go up against a tough defense that, like, everybody in WNBA was a star in college. And with only 12 right. teams, you're facing a loaded team almost every single night. But Rekia is somebody who I just think is going to be very good very soon. And she actually plays tonight too at 10 o'clock against the Atlanta Dream. I was very, very happy to kind of get her. And then I love rookie drafts. I'll trade everybody just to kind of keep getting picks, because as much as I talk about playing safe, damn it, I want those shiny toys too. And my number six overall player was still available there at pick eight. So I traded the 11th overall pick as well as Laisha Clarendon. to get J.C. Sheldon, who, kind of like Angel Reese, isn't off to the hottest start right now, but there's such a quick turnaround time, too, from college to the WNBA. You have 2 weeks of training camp, and that's a week after the WNBA draft, which is a week after the national championship game. Sheldon's Ohio State Buckeyes made it pretty far. She's somebody who I expect to play a really big role, and I wanted her just because, like, I believe in the skill set. I believe in her defense. They really needed a defensive first guard who could complement Arike there. And with Satu Sabali going to miss until about the Olympic break with her shoulder surgery, there's going to be a big opportunity for J.C. Sheldon to kind of step up. So I'm not really kind of, like, upset at this slow start for her. Is kind of expected. Like, she's going to be brought along slowly. That's kind of what the Wings do. But yeah, I was absolutely thrilled to walk away with those two, especially in the WNBA. Only 13 of the 26 players are on rosters this year. The draft kind of, you know, you're not guaranteed. Last year we saw first rounders who were drafted in the first round not make their team. So to walk away with two players who I am very high on, invested in, and they're both on their team and they're both playing right away, I'm very, very happy. And I think better days are ahead for Angel Reese too, for you. You don't have to worry about that. Yeah, I think it's going to be looking positive for her as well moving forward.
Yeah, not the best start, but that's okay. I went her with the sixth pick in the rookie draft. And then I had, I think, Markeisha Davis in the second round. And I don't think she played, I don't know, in their first game. So, but that's okay. Expecting better things from Angel Reese moving forward. When we did this startup draft, I was about to go on a cruise. And so I took Matt Lawson's, because he did some dynasty rankings for WNBA ahead of last season. I don't think he's done them this year. And I'm assuming he's probably not going to at this point. But I like kind of went through and just chose a bunch of young players that, hey, I'm going to like not have service for a week. Can this just be like my big board and you just pull from here? And he was like, yeah, sure. I was like, okay, cool. Intentionally went with a really young team to try and get Caitlin Clark, and then ended up freaking making the playoffs and losing first round or something like that, which that was kind of annoying. But I have Aaliyah Boston. I have Angel Reese. I have other players that are good as well.
You have it. Shakira also. We may have to talk offline here just so I can try to get her, because I've been – you'll see randomly on Twitter, I'll just say Shakira Austin in all capital letters, just because she is the triple J of the WNBA. Yeah. And I think she's going to win the most improved player this year. She's just a beast. She had five blocks last night in their opener against the Liberty. So yeah, I'm looking at your roster now. It's looking pretty, pretty, pretty good.
Sounds like we're going to have to make a deal yet, cause I need Paige. So,
there we go.
If you didn't know this, like tanking in dynasty leagues, hence the Tank Me Later podcast. It's fun. It's what I do.
Fantasy should be fun. Yeah, you want to win, but like, have fun with it, man. That's like, I am that guy. I could get up on a soapbox and just go on forever here, but this is fun, man. This is a fake game we play. And like, if you're not having fun with it, you shouldn't be doing it. That's what it's all about. So like, yeah, the goal is to win, but like, it is so fun to just build and build and tank and just dream. And like, that's why we do it. It's a lot of fun. So I fully support your tankathon for 2024.
It may be, and maybe this is just me being psychotic, it might be more fun for me to go through a rebuild than to actually win, but
1,000%.
I don't know. Maybe that's just me being a little bit psychotic about it, but we are having to play on ESPN, which shout out to ESPN for having it.
Yeah.
But this is also a time for us to petition for Yahoo and Fantrax to, hey, people are playing this game. You guys need to add, I guess also Sleeper is another, you know, format that could add it. There are other fantasy formats that add it. I think I'm almost expecting a little bit more from Fantrax and Yahoo to happen next season. Personally, I thought it was going to happen for more leagues just because, hey, Caitlin Clark is obviously bringing a ton of hype to the WNBA. This is the best season to start because a lot of people are going to have, you know, more interest in this than they did previously. This is a great time to start. It hasn't happened yet, but we're petitioning for it, correct?
We are, and this is something that, like, I'm very passionate about. I have, like, reached out to Fantrax for two straight years now and saying, hey, like, ESPN is doing this. And again, shout out to ESPN. Is it my favorite platform? Absolutely not. But kudos to you for kind of getting ahead of it and just not like, hey, this is the latest trend now. We can kind of capitalize on it. But no, like, you're investing in women's sports. You're investing in women. Caitlin Clark is bringing more eyeballs. The league has been healthy. It's been doubling its revenue from 2019 to 2023. We're seeing the charter flights. We're seeing expansion happen. We're seeing more eyeballs than ever on this. Look at draft night, people watching that. 18 million watching the national title game. Like, women's basketball is here. It's always just need the investment. And that starts with everybody. That starts with the fans buying tickets. That starts with us buying merchandise, for us talking about it, for us playing fantasy, even though some people may not be too into it, that they want to learn. It's been amazing seeing my DMs filled with people asking me questions about the WNBA. Say, hey, I'm here in Phoenix. I want to get into this more. Can you tell me? I saw we traded a pick, but like, Kalia Copper, is she good? Is she somebody I should pay attention to? I'm like, hey, absolutely. I welcome it. Like, I love to talk about this. And we did a draft last night with a bunch of people who didn't really know much about it. They wanted to kind of learn along. So I think it's the responsibility of places like Fantrax, like Yahoo, like CBS, like Sleeper to make sure that you're offering this, because the demand is there. It will be there. If you're using this on the old data that you have, that the interest wasn't there, you need to actually like look at who your person is that's scraping your data, because like, the conversation is here and it's not going away. And that goes for fantasy sites too. Like, that's on you. You need to cover this. That's on you, the different sites out there. I'm not going to call them all out, but I have reached out to them. I've stopped working for some of them because like, hey, it's like, we need to have this. We need to have this investment here. And it's just super, super important. So honestly, huge kudos to ESPN. Huge kudos for offering this. And we're seeing kind of the return on that. And to your point, I expect and I hope that we see Fantrax and Yahoo kind of follow suit. I hope that we see CBS kind of follow suit from there. And I hope that as we're kind of seeing now, where it's just a topic of conversation, that we're just seeing more and more podcasts and more places saying, okay, like, here's your WNBA draft guide. Here's kind of like the strategy for this year. What format do you want to play? Here's the players that you're going to do. So yeah, it's a lot of fun. I recommend kind of trying it out. And yeah, just shout out ESPN to everybody else. Just kind of like step up. It's on you.
Yeah. And a couple of, you may know more, but these are the two main resources that I've seen. Hashtag Basketball has projections and rankings out where you can adjust your points leagues because that's the only format that's available. And then shout out to Sports Ethos. They started the Fantasy WNBA Today podcast. That's with, it looks like they have four people, but Jared Russo and Jared Ross King, I think, are the two main guys. And it looks like Scott Keller and then at Orange DFS on Twitter. Those four are in charge of the WNBA podcast, Sports Ethos. Shout out to them. That's the only fantasy WNBA podcast that I know of. Do you know of other fantasy WNBA resources, or is this why we're having this conversation and call to action saying, hey, we need more of these resources because there aren't any?
There may be one or two coming down the pike that I can say. But TBD. Those are the main ones. And shout out to Sports Ethos for doing it. I know there are people behind the scenes of Fantasy Pros who's really trying to get that going as well. And shout out to you, Kelly. I appreciate it. You're cool with me calling you out on that, you wonky penguin. So you're fantastic. And yeah, hashtag basketball is just fantastic. Joseph, I believe, is a person who's been doing that for a few years now and just is really kind of like, hey, this is out here. I'm going to get that too. But yeah, I think that we're going to see in the next year or two, all the other main sites kind of do that too. I think we're really going to see that where I kind of follow along with Lawson. I know he put those out last year. Mm-hmm. I can see that happening again as you guys continue to grow over their FBI. I can see NBC Sports Edge kind of evolving in that way too. The Athletic, I hope we see that as well as Fantrax, because you know, as soon as Fantrax offers it, they're going to have people write about it too. Like, it makes all the sense in the world. So I think this is going to be the last year that we're kind of like struggling to kind of find these resources. Once they're seeing more people kind of talk about it, more people demand. And sometimes it takes things to get hot and people get on the bandwagon. If that's what it takes, bandwagons are awesome. Come aboard and like, yeah, make it happen. Cause I promise you the people are out there and you will see that return.
Yeah. Exciting times for the WNBA. That's going to do it for this episode. Mike, do you have any work coming up that we should be checking out? I know you just had the very cool column for The Athletic. Is there anything we should be looking out for?
Yeah, I got a couple more things coming for The Athletic. Another fun story that isn't quite basketball related, but it's more of across the board. And if you know anything about like viral moments in sports, I think this one will be of interest to you. So that's a little tease there. And I just joined the team over at Winsider as well. That's WInsider. Going to be doing some work there, some editing and some writing work there. And like I said, there may be a podcast coming down the road here geared at WNBA and WNBA fantasy. So yeah, just stay tuned for that.
Love it. And you can follow Mike at Michael Waterloo on Twitter. But that's going to do it for this episode of the Take Me Later podcast. And Mike, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me. This was fun. And besides the Nets talk, it was great. Let's go Grizzlies.
Definitely. Definitely a lot of fun. And hopefully next time you're on, we won't have to talk about the Nets at all. But that's going to do it, everyone. Thank you so much for listening.
You just listened to another episode from the Fantasy Basketball International Podcast Network. Thanks for joining us. And for more information about joining our community, please check out our website at fbibasketball.com.